Good afternoon. This is Ken McDermott Rowe. The name of the show is In Context on WPKN, live political call-in show. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
And behind the boards, doing double duty, is our engineer and military commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe.
Good afternoon, folks.
In Context is on at noon on Mondays, and I want to note that next Monday we will be starting our WPKN fundraising drive. We'll go for 3 weeks, so please tune in and pledge your support. We really appreciate your support. You keep us on the air with your generosity, and it's very important nowadays that we have an independent media that give people information they're not going to get from other corporate sources. And this show, we're going to talk about the storm that occurred last October. Did you lose your power? About 70% of the CLMP customers lost their power. You may be one of them. And we're going to be speaking with Ubong Adama in a few minutes after we do our news summary. And he's written an article for Reuters about the storm. And we'll be taking your call so we can discuss the storm, what happened to your house, who do you think is at fault, what do you think should be done about it. And that'll be in about 10 minutes. Right now, we'll take a look at the news. There's a breaking story that Gus just brought to my attention. It has to do with Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky.
Yeah, this is I just found it from the Daily Caller. It was published this morning at 10:16 a.m. And Senator Rand Paul, Senator of Kentucky, has been detained by the TSA at the Nashville airport as he was trying to fly back to Washington, D.C. There was you want to use the other mic?
Yeah, I think you're going to need to switch to the other mic.
Okay, okay. Gus Cantavero.
How does that sound?
Are we coming through?
Yeah, much better.
You can hear me?
Yep.
All right, I don't hear myself, but that's all right. anyway, so I was saying Senator Rand Paul has been detained at the TSA by the TSA in Nashville Airport as he was trying to fly back to Washington, D.C. It says there was an anomaly detected in the scanner, and he has refused a full-body pat-down. So he's currently being detained by the TSA. And as we know, his father, Ron Paul, is running for president right now and is a very unpopular candidate among the establishment. And Rand Paul, his son, a senator, is extremely unpopular as well. So I wonder what is behind this. We've seen before that there are motivations behind some of these pat-downs. Some protest figures and prominent anti-war figures have been targeted for these harassment measures. And as there's an update from 11:30, says TSA Senator says Senator Rand Paul was not detained at any point, but triggered an alarm during routine airport screening and refused to complete the screening process in order to resolve the issue. So they're saying he wasn't detained, but he's being held. So I don't know whether
I think this is part of a pattern. Really since 9/11, moving into a more and more an authoritarian state, having our civil rights eroded, and becoming accustomed to authority figures hassling us, stopping us, and doing stuff that they couldn't do before 9/11.
Hey, but it's funny the way that they contradict themselves. They say he was not detained at any point, but then in the next paragraph, the TSA adds, he was escorted out of the screening area by local law enforcement because that's what our procedures predict.
Yeah, and what is this? Who's in control?
He's not detained, but he is detained.
Of course he is, and has a chilling effect. I noticed another story earlier this month in the Huffington Post that the manufacturer's planning to sell 18,000 spy drones to police departments throughout the country. It's a nickname, the Switchblade, and it not only can track a person.
Sounds friendly.
But it can land on a person and explode.
What?
No, that's what it says.
Oh, my God.
So now we're putting the American people in the same category as Iraqi and Afghan insurgents. Basically, the government views you the same way they do the Taliban.
Well, and of course, as we covered this story about that amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, which gives Obama the power to authorize the military to detain civilians, hold them indefinitely in military custody, you know, without trial.
But you know how we used to call the police peace officers? And now they have spy drones called switchblades that can land on people and explode.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're treating people like varmints, you know, like they're coyotes trying to steal their chickens.
That's right. Well, a government that sees its people as the enemy is a government that's really on thin ice.
Which is
an article that you came across recently having to do with an Atlanta newspaper publisher.
Oh, yes. A fellow by the name of Andrew Adler is the publisher and owner, I believe, of the Atlanta Jewish Times. Now, this is, of course, you know, you could imagine a relatively biased newspaper, but he advocated in his newspaper, and folks can go look this up. You type in Atlanta Jewish Times assassination, and he calls for the assassination of President Barack Obama in order to, quote-unquote, save the state of Israel because the vice president will know he has to attack Iran. Now, I just would like folks to think about the absurdity of this for a minute. This is a man in a newspaper, in a very well-recognized newspaper, advocating, in one of the oldest Jewish communities in America, advocating the assassination of the American president. If this man were anyone else, if this were a Muslim preacher, or even a Christian preacher for that matter, or anyone else, he would have ended up in Guantanamo. He'd have been arrested by Homeland Security overnight, but somehow this is amazing. Excusable.
But we should note that he did later retract it, nonetheless, calling in print for the assassination of the president is really over the top.
He retracted it, but then so did, you know, Bin Laden retract his, you know, the claim that he didn't blow up the World Trade Center, yet we still went after him.
But in the climate we're in now, assassination as an act of state is not out of hand. We assassinated that Yemeni leader. Obama had a mortar.
Anwar al-Awlaki.
That's right.
But
so
the absurdity that we would tolerate somebody calling for the assassination of our president because they're our ally is insane.
And of course, it's not clear who assassinated the Iranian scientist who was assassinated about 10 days ago. But it appears that the Mossad did it. I mean, that Time magazine said the Mossad did it, and I believe they said that the Iranians should expect similar events to occur. They didn't overtly say they did it, but the CIA is now saying that that they are not associated with it. Implying that the Mossad's doing.
Well, it's the CIA trying to pretend to be the good guys. You know, pretty much what we're doing is we're playing a game of cat and mouse, if you will, or it's chicken. It's two locomotives heading towards each other trying to play chicken, in a sense.
We're playing chicken with their heads cut off.
Exactly. What we're doing is we're saying that, well, we're not involved. It's the Israelis. And so then the Israelis are saying, well, we're not involved. But, you know, it appears that the Israelis might be framing the CIA. The whole idea is that when war breaks out, we can claim that we were the victims of either a setup or the war wasn't our fault, but now we're in it, and gosh darn it, a million young Americans have to go fight it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's ultimately, I think, what's behind it. Because in reality, the CIA knows everything the Mossad is doing and vice versa. This shouldn't be a surprise to either of them, yet the CIA is claiming they knew nothing about the assassination. I don't know.
And we dodged a bullet here at home when the SOAP apparently was withdrawn, at least for the moment, this bill against pirating of software, which threatens to really shut down a good portion of the Internet, put it under control of the big corporations. And the idea was that any website hosts like Facebook or like YouTube who has people sharing files on their website that were copyrighted, under the law now, that copyrighted material can be taken down if the copyright owner complains. But that apparently isn't enough. The corporations want the power to actually shut down the host, which would have a tremendous – I mean, if YouTube was told – knew that they had to be – that they could be shut down,
it would take it much further. If you wanted to frame somebody, it would be incredibly easy to do so. If you wanted to get a – say you had a political dissident website, something that's anti-war, and someone – they wanted to take you down. The establishment wanted to take you down, but they couldn't do it on grounds of censoring your free speech. So instead, what they would do is have somebody post anonymously a copyrighted piece of material on your website, mm-hmm. and now the feds can sweep in and just take down your entire website for undisclosed period of time.
And the bill
no
also,
due process.
And this bill also carried criminal penalties, five and even 10-year prison sentences for posting copyrighted.
And they already
material.
Have the power to take down copyrighted material. So the fact that they wanted to just make this draconian leap forward and have unquestioned no limits on their authority just is completely frightening. And the thing is that Google already has the power to censor the Internet, and they do so all the time. They take down news aggregators who they think are cheating the system, like Drudge Report or, say, InfoWars, because they're compiling information.
I see.
And they say, this is an aggregator. You're cheating the system.
And yet aggregators are really important. important. I know
they
use them as sources of news because they're
people who are
looking for the types of news items that are of interest to us. Access,
right.
Government overreaching and aggregate.
And they find things in places that you don't
normally
look.
And they send the links to you so that you can quickly find these materials that you never possibly have found on your own.
And this is very reminiscent of what is the first thing Mussolini did when he came to power? He shut down all the opposition press. And Hitler did the same thing. So did Stalin and Mao.
Well, you know,
I think there's an interesting pattern.
Marjan and Gus, we'll have to get back to this because I'd like to take a music break.
Can I just mention one more story before we do that?
Well, what can you hold it for later? Because I told our guest, Abong, that we'd be calling him right about now. So
fine.
We need to go to a music break, and then we'll be back with Abong Adama, and we'll be taking your calls about the storms that occurred last year.
All right. See ya.
Come get out of the way, boys. Quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boy. Better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port. And our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the fore. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. We pick and choose as we please, boys. Pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boys. Best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to shack. And we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boys. We're the cops of the world. Our boots are needing a shine, boys. Boots are needing a shine. But our Coca-Cola is fine, boys. Coca-Cola is fine. We've got to protect all our citizens fair. So we'll send a battalion for everyone there. And maybe we'll leave in a couple of years. 'Cause we're the cops of the world, boy. We're the cops of the world.
Tuned in. You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM, Bridgeport, Connecticut, streaming at WPKN.org. The name of the show is In Context, a live political call-in show. I'm here. My name is Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with Gus Cantavero, my fellow host, and Marchand McDermott Rowe, our engineer and military commentator. Were you one of the 70% of the CLMP customers that lost power during the October storm? What's going on, and what's been the government response? That's been followed by our guest, Abong Adama, who is a reporter with a correspondent with WSHU at the state capitol in Connecticut, and he also writes for Reuters. He has a recent article on the government response to the storm. Abong, are you with us? Hello, Abong.
Abong, are you there? Yep. I love these phones. They're so good.
Hello, Abong. Should we try to get him back on?
You got to unlock it, right? Okay.
Try now.
Hello, Abong, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay, I don't know if you heard your introduction, but we're going to talk about your recent article in Reuters on the government's response to the storm. And, of course, 70% of the CLMP customers lost their power in the October storm, and the governor requested a report on it, and it just came out from a special panel. It's called the Two Storms Report. Two Storms Panel. Why is it called the Two Storms Panel?
Well, it's called the Two Storms Panel because of the August storm that we had, which was followed by a freak snowstorm in October.
That was a tropical storm Irene.
So tropical storm Irene was in August, and it was it started out as a hurricane, but by the time it hit Connecticut, it was a tropical storm, but it still did a lot of damage, and it resulted in extended power outages in many parts of the state. And the governor set up the panel initially to deal with the aftermath of that disaster. And just as the panel was set up, the October snowstorm comes. And so what the governor did was he broadened the area, it broadened it to the two storms for them to look into how the utilities handled and the state itself, how prepared we were to handle these natural disasters.
As a report card goes, how did the utilities, CLNP and United Illuminating, how did they come out?
I think United Illuminating came out much better than CLNP. I think CLNP, everyone got ticked off with CLNP. As a matter of fact, it ended with CLNP's CEO, Jeffrey Butler, losing his job. Officially resigned, but it was pretty obvious that he had to go.
Why was it that it took as much as 12 days to get power back on? Did the utilities have a good explanation for that?
They had explanations whether it was good or not.
They kept talking fast. Huh?
but the politicians were really ticked off. I mean, they were affected themselves. You know, this is not just a matter of my constituents are out of power. Everyone was out of power,
mm-hmm.
There were places that were out for 12 days.
You know, it's actually a pretty good report. I read it, and there's a link to it on our website, incontextreport.com. Any listeners who want to look at it, it's a 39-page report, great detail, and it has, I think, 82 recommendations.
82 recommendations, yes. And the most important thing here is that, years ago I covered deregulation of electricity, the electricity industry in Connecticut. And I remember at the time asking, you know, how is this going to make things better? Well, we now know, having lived through it, we now know that basically what has happened is that the utilities have cut back on personnel and they've cut back on maintenance.
What did it mean when they were deregulated? Did that mean the public utilities regulatory authorities stopped looking at things?
Well, basically, what happened before before 2000, I believe it was 2000 that we had the deregulation. But before that, utilities were heavily regulated and were guaranteed to make a certain profit, and they were in charge of production as well as distribution of electricity. So in the territories that they operated in, they were the only game in town. Then I know that this was a national push, and some states did it, some states did not. That Connecticut was one of those that went for this. They said, you know what, the problem here is that if we have competition, just like the deregulation of the phone companies, if we have competition, that it will reduce the cost to the
customer. But that's only in the cost of the energy production, not in the delivery.
Well, it was difficult to have competition in delivery because of how expensive.
Yeah, you can only have one set of lines, obviously.
To set those things up.
Yeah.
And so we had the old companies that were responsible, the utilities were responsible for distribution, but then generation, you could have anybody generate electricity. So it was decoupled. Distribution and generation mm-hmm. was decoupled. So the same company could not do both.
Yeah, and the generation of the electricity is basically less than half of your bill. So I don't know how much it really saved in the end.
Well, we know how much it really saved because we know that the bills have gone up since then.
What are the observations of the governor's panel was that senior management appeared to give short shrift to the concept of emergency planning. How could these guys not know that big storms were likely to happen?
Well, you have to realize that before, when you had a fixed profit that you could make, it was easier to work these things into your cost. However, now with the so-called deregulation, you're looking for return to the investor, and you're looking for places where you can trim, mm-hmm. so that you can have a higher return.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, that's basically
to recap, then
these decisions were made.
So under the old system, the state said, "Look, you guys are guaranteed a return on your investment, but we're going to look over your shoulder and make sure that you make the necessary investments in order to assure a good service to your customers."
Yes, and quite. If you read that report, you will see that we have two municipal utilities in Connecticut. We have one in Norwich and one in Wallingford, and they are operating pretty much the same that they have before deregulation. And if you notice, there was hardly any disruption in those areas. And where there were disruptions, they were able to get back online very fast because the same systems that were in place before have continued to be in place. Their tree trimming is on the same schedules that they had before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The hardening of their infrastructure, it's a routine thing that mm-hmm. they do on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Those things had not changed. However, where we had deregulation, there were cost saving, you know, was the goal, and you have to try and see where you can cut back.
Yeah, it seems to me that we see in this report, you know, the governor recommends, you know, fining CLMP or other utility organizations who fail to respond or prepare to catastrophes, but. On the one hand, I see it as just that the utility companies are going to, because it's so profitable for them, they're just going to take the fine and continue to operate a lean ship and continue to make their profits because it's more profitable to take the fine than it is to increase the services.
In fact, Gus, as I understand it, there is no authority, right, Abong, for fines at the moment.
No. As a matter of fact, what the governor is recommending is legislation that would create these standards,
mm-hmm.
and if they didn't meet those standards, then they could face the fines. And
so then we'll just see a Connecticut Light and Power energy executive run for governor, and then he'll just rig it. So I mean, I hate this whole system. This is so stupid.
And we're really facing perhaps a dire situation. The report all us note it said that the utilities should plan for the worst case scenario. A Hurricane 3 category, and it said that if such a hurricane hits, it anticipates that the entire state would be blacked out for a month.
Why don't – I don't advocate this actually taking place, but wouldn't the consumer get more return for their investment if it just became a state-run utility?
As I said earlier, we have examples of that right here in Connecticut. We have two municipal utility companies.
Yeah, yeah.
One in
yeah.
Norwich,
yeah.
One in Wallingford.
Exactly.
And the record is there. You know, we don't have to go too far.
And what is the difference of cost between those?
They're cheaper.
Of course.
So they're
don't
actually
you love capitalism?
So again, they're publicly owned, and so who actually runs those in those municipalities?
Basically, they're municipally owned. So,
they're like a Department of Public Works.
Yeah,
you'd have a Department of.
They were set up by those municipalities and are run by the municipalities.
See, when it comes to a basic public service like this, clearly not a luxury. I think we all generally agree we want electricity, right? I think everybody, yeah, yeah. It's the general agreement in the room. We all want electricity.
Well, actually, there is a push right now to have more local generation and to also have a decoupling of the grid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And that way, you have instead of one or two major generation plants, you have generation plants everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you might be able to add, and also the hardening of the system, which I mean, the hardening of the system. What this means is having sturdier wires to running sturdier wires,
yeah.
That
or underground
that will be most of it will be underground,
yeah.
Especially in the urban centers.
Yes,
you know, and But there's a cost to that.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined us, you're listening to In Context on WPKN, and we're talking with Avang Adama about the two-storm panel report on the last winter snowstorm and the earlier tropical storm Irene. And mm-hmm. if you'd like to call in and talk to us about these situations, maybe you lost your one of the many people lost your power, give us a ring here at WPKN at 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756, or you can email us at ken@mdrtalk.org. That's ken@mdrtalk.org. We get your email up right away, and then we'll read your question on the air.
One point I just want to mention, just for some perspective, is that I think that it would be a good policy going forward for new construction homes to be incentivized to have some kind of solar panel production, not for 100% of their output, but for each home, say 20% of the power that they use for all their critical loads. My parents, for example, put solar power on their house several years ago as just because they were tired of losing power. And they get, about 50 to 75% of their house is powered by solar. So when the power goes out, it's actually not an inconvenience. The whole family comes over, we have dinner, the refrigerator's run, everything's fine. And as long as the sun comes out within a couple of days, everything's, it's fine.
There is a push for more solar power.
Yeah.
And in Connecticut, they're also pushing for fuel cell
mm-hmm.
technology
mm-hmm.
and basically having most of the basic the big structures like
yes.
institutions
mm-hmm.
have generate a lot of their own power.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I went to a building in New Haven with the governor went there. This was in the summer. There's a huge development in downtown New Haven. The name escapes me right now.
Sorry.
But it's supposed to be the largest green building
mm-hmm.
in the state. It's a residential building, but they actually are generating their own power, and the surplus is sent into the grid.
Mm-hmm.
And
that really reduces a lot of the load on our aging power infrastructure.
Yes, and as a matter, but I'll tell you, for customers, this is going to cost money because I know that the CLMP came up with a plan to strengthen or harden their system.
Yeah,
and they are coming up with a $2.2 billion bill for it,
mm-hmm.
and basically it would be the ratepayers.
Yeah.
Who'd have to pay for this.
Yeah.
So it's... It
but why? Because they haven't made enough money over the years that they don't have a surplus? I don't understand. Why does it always have to get passed on to us? That's part of doing business, isn't it?
Well, apparently, Joseph McGee, who chaired the two-panel committee that looked into this, said, well, if it's 10% more and we're guaranteed better power, maybe people will go.
And I guess in terms of the overall oil price shocks that we've had to absorb, I mean, I look at my heating oil bill. It's double over the last couple of years. Maybe the extra 10% wouldn't necessarily be noticed.
Yeah, are you getting better oil?
I don't know. Yeah, it's the same oil.
Is it better heat?
I'm not any hotter. In fact, I'm colder because I turn it down, like a lot of customers.
Well, that's also interesting because our electric bills are going down now because most of the generation is natural gas. And the price of natural
yes.
gas has been dropping astronomically.
Yes.
And so the rates are actually going to be going down for electricity this year.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's nice.
Well, now, Avang, as you study the whole electrical picture, as you look into the future, could you see a time, maybe a generation from now, where a substantial part of our energy will be generated locally, maybe even in one's house, and then fed into some kind of smart grid to share?
Well, that is the direction that things are going. How soon we get to that point, I don't know, but that seems to be the direction. There's a lot of resistance because, once you diffuse this, a lot of the power that, certain industries have will no longer be there. So there's the energy industry would like everything concentrated as much as possible because that's how they maximize profits.
Mm.
But the, it looks as if that's the general direction in which we will be going. How soon we get there is up in the air.
As long as we look at this report in the short term, what are the steps that are most important to be taken, say, in the next 12 months or so, to prepare for another really big storm which could wipe us out for a month or more with blackout?
Immediately, I would think that what would pass this the most, that would have the most effect this session, this upcoming session, will be a tighter control of the utilities,
mm-hmm.
Forcing them to hire more staff and make arrangements to have adequate staffing to deal with emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Yvonne, thank you so much for following the story. We haven't had, I don't believe we have any calls coming in, but I want to thank you for sharing your study of the situation. And of course, we're all hoping for the best that this work gets done, this necessary work gets done before the next big one hits us.
Well, let's hope so.
We've been speaking with Yvonne Adama about the Two Storms panel report of Governor Malloy. Thanks so much for being with us, Yvonne.
Well, thank you so much, Ken.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, cool. So I don't know if that was enlightening or depressing. I don't know.
Well, one of the most chilling aspects of the report, and again, it's there's a link to the entire text of the report on our website, incontextreport.com, was that the meteorologist said we are overdue for a hurricane. And, of course, Irene was almost a hurricane, and then it was downgraded. It was a hurricane, and it was downgraded to a tropical storm.
We've had a variety of different storms, though. But I mean, 2 years ago, we had a huge nor'easter, right, that trimmed a ton of trees. Remember that?
Well, they predicted that when we do get this Hurricane 3 storm, which is what they say the utilities should be planning for, it could take out something like, I believe it was 90%. No, 70% of the trees. In contrast, the last...
Wow, make it look like a golf course.
Exactly. They said the last storm took out, I think the Irene took out 1% to 2%.
So we're that's looking insane.
We're looking at Hurricane 3 would be devastation.
Yeah, we do. You look around, we do have a lot of old trees that are pretty soft cores. Like they don't
that's
have a
it.
Lot going on.
And 90% of the outages are caused by trees falling on the line, which is also what we discussed with
the But you know what's so stupid? I drive around town and I'm like, that's a dangerous tree. That's a dangerous tree. That tree's overhanging power lines. Wow, I can't believe that person has that tree hanging over their driveway. That's ridiculous. Do we have a call? No? Oh, okay. Should I get into the story I wanted to get into?
Well, if you'd like to comment on the storm report, you can give us a ring at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. And if you want to tell a story about the storm, please give us a ring, and we'd like to hear what your experience is and what you think needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, if we don't have any calls, we can move on to some of the other stories. I know you were interested in another story that you just before we went into the.
March, you're really carrying on with an animated conversation. Is that relevant to the show or?
Can we put the caller through?
Hold on, folks.
I believe we have a caller coming through.
This better be good.
Hello, you're on the air on WPKN.
This is Chuck Wolf?
Ah,
hi, Chuck.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
So here's my question for. I actually was hoping to catch a bong on, but. I don't know. Maybe people have a comment or two as they think about it.
We may.
You know, where we live up in Simsbury, we had a power loss about 10 days or so. And we had actually a colleague of my wife's where she works at the university lost her life because people were unable to get to
my goodness.
Her home because of wires all over the street
right.
when her house caught on fire. And I think finding the utility companies is a big mistake. I mean, it just get raised and passed along to the people that pay the bills.
Yeah, that's one of the points we made when we talked, yeah.
What Abong discussed suggested that the deregulation had not worked out. Do you think that's right?
What I'm wondering is, did anybody come up with any ideas about holding people who have senior level of positions accountable? I mean, are bonuses impacted? Are salaries impacted?
I guess that would be part of the deregulation. The idea is that they could reward their bosses for their creative leadership and cutting costs, and we would look the other way as long as we got the right result.
is anybody punished when things like this happen?
Oh, no, clearly not.
Right. Fairness.
I mean, unless they've committed a crime of some sort, but, you know, I guess...
I mean, what is a crime in terms of being prepared for a state's emergency when you're not, and that's what you're charged with, and you're making over $500,000?
Well, I guess Jeffrey Butler did lose his job at CLMP, the chief operating officer, but the fact that there were no penalties, that surprised me. I assumed the state could penalize the utility.
Well,
that's apparently not.
Yeah, my concern is why not have something where people, knowing that they're going into these jobs, have to spend the money and the time making realistic preparations. Otherwise, the behavior just gets repeated.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Chuck. I think we have some other callers coming through.
Okay.
All right, we'll speak to you soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks,
okay,
Chuck.
Don't forget to mention you'll be on my show on Wednesday.
That's all right.
Okay, great. We're going to be at Chuck. We'll be on Chuck's show on this Wednesday at noon, the Emotion Roadmap.
Okay.
We'll be talking to you then.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
All right. See you.
This is Robert calling from his car in Torrington.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a comment on, I was listening to the gentleman in talking about the two-storm report.
Yeah,
right.
Mr. Adama.
The only thing is, I hate to throw cold water on it, but other than burying the utilities underground, I don't really see a way that they're going to improve this system at all. As far as local generation goes, how would they do that?
Well, one other really low-tech thing they need to do, and the government recognizes it, is cut down and trim trees. And I asked for $1 million extra to go for that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
It's not quick. 90% of the outages were.
It's not like pulling weeds.
So that is something they can do right away. But I agree. Some of these other things, many of the other recommendations are long term things, like training people in the municipalities, coordinating. The report said that when an emergency occurs, the emergency personnel in the municipalities shouldn't be meeting each other for the first time.
Yeah.
Which apparently happens now.
Yeah, I think essentially what they're getting at is that there's a complete lack of preparedness and communication. There was a complete lack of communication between the senior executives at CLMP and then the ground crews, you know, and they had to call in outside responses. So it just seems like all they do is respond to disasters rather than plan for them.
I would definitely agree. It's very reactive as opposed to proactive.
Yes. Which grates me.
Well, it does, and some of the delays in getting service back on were just hideously extended. But I'm a solar user myself, and I like solar power, and it's pretty beneficial. But most of the systems that are in play now are grid tied systems.
Yeah.
Grid-tied systems don't do you any good if you lose any power.
Well, if you have a decoupler, you should be fine then.
Well, they have to disconnect from your power lines when the power goes out. Basically, it neuters your system.
Well, as I understand it, you have a DC disconnect. You should be able to pull a switch and disconnect yourself from the grid. Is that right?
Well, yeah, the whole thing shuts down. Now, there may be something that I've had mine in for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
There may be something you can do internally in your home. But at the time, the way it was explained to me was it was either that or... I could do that if I had batteries as a backup.
Oh, I see. Well, my parents have batteries, so they're all right.
Yeah. Okay. The thing with that is that's a whole other nightmare because you're essentially adding square footage onto your house to have a room for batteries because they give off a gas which is really explosive and treat them with the water and such.
Yeah, and you need an event fan. But that's a decision people have to make on a case-by-case
basis. Thanks so
much.
I would like to continue this conversation. Caller.
We have a lot of calls lined up.
We have some other callers, but this is really, I really would love to get into your solar, understand your solar system better. But we have to move on to another call. Thank you very much for calling.
And this is John from Madison. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Yep. Hey, how you doing, guys? A couple of things. The guy who has the solar thing, just as an FYI, past 4 years, battery technology for solar is gone. They have these new gel batteries that don't require anywhere near the amount of maintenance or give off the vapors that the old acid-based batteries did.
Yes.
Do you have solar in your house, caller?
I do, but not. I don't have any really involved sort of system at the moment.
What percentage of your power can you get from your solar system?
I can light the house. I can charge my phones, run my computers, run my radios. The two big issues, the two things that where solar sort of falls flat on is to run your refrigerator. that the amp draw on that is pretty deep. So you really need a ton of batteries to make that work, mm-hmm, because every time the compressor comes on, the power draw for the amperage over there is pretty big.
Right.
Likewise, if you have a compressor on an air conditioner, it's the same issue.
Yeah.
Again, the draw is pretty big, and to design the system around those two is pretty big, right?
Yeah, it's not cheap. I'll be honest. I mean, I do have a little experience with this. You know, my parents, they're able to run the fridge, the appliances, critical things, have a couple lights on. It's mostly candlelight. They decided to run their appliances. So if you design a system around what you want, you can have it done.
What was your experience?
I'm saying, but you will end up paying a lot more for a battery bank to handle
than
you would otherwise.
But that was their decision. Other people have to make their decision.
Did they come in to be helpful to you during the October storm or the Tropical Storm Irene?
So we were out for about a week for the tropical storm, mm-hmm, and yes, that helped quite a bit. I also have a gas backup generator as well, too. So, you know, other than... it really was not that big of an inconvenience, because I'm also on natural gas as well too.
Oh, great!
So we survived fairly well. However,
you overcame the unpreparedness of CLMP by being prepared yourself.
Yes, pretty much.
what a concept!
Yeah, that's quite a lesson in that.
Which will lead me to my next real reason I kind of called,
okay,
which is to follow up on the unpreparedness,
yes,
of the grid in general. NASA is predicting a solar storm,
yes,
so large, and
at the end of this year,
conditions in the atmosphere that could potentially knock off the grid for most of North America.
Yes,
and leave, and literally bring us back to the 1800s overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. Well, when again is this?
The end of this year.
The end. So.
Yeah. Well, it's not a question of if; it's really a question of when.
Yeah. Well, we can plan it. It's possibly within the next 18 months. We don't know exactly. It's very unpredictable.
And is there anything we could do to harden our systems against the effects of this flare?
Well, the answer is the Congress had actually several years ago had talked about it. Didn't really do anything, which is par for the course.
Right.
But they can buy the equivalent of very large circuit breakers for the grid. So basically, we'll put these circuit breakers in place. You get the EMF storm, the circuit breakers would trip, and then you would basically be able to reset them, and then, you know, be back up and running. However, a transformer, which is really, very, you know, the tolerances on transformers these days are so tight that any sort of electromagnetic interference will pop them off.
Right.
These are billion-dollar pieces of gear that are only made in China these days.
But these transformers,
the
transformers are the things that hang on the poles outside your house. So if they
the big ones at the stations.
The big transformers where you see...
at the relay.
They would go by the real huge transformers in the grid itself, right?
At the relay station.
Would it damage your appliances? Would it cause?
I think cars that run on computers would probably be disabled.
If your car is running when this happens, your car will be pretty much toast. My understanding is if your car is not running, you probably can make it run, but then... Good luck, because all the gas pumps are obviously...
You'd actually have to disconnect your battery, because the onboard computer runs even when the car is off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
All right. Well, I've looked into this a little bit.
Caller, thank you so much for those interesting points. I believe we have another caller on the line, so I have to say goodbye. Thanks for calling.
You know what's interesting, though, is that this is the exact same thing as an EMP bomb that we've been talking about.
China or Iran hitting
us with an EMP bomb. It's the exact same thing as a solar flare.
And what's funny is all of our enemies have hardened most of their systems to this, so we're going to be left in the Middle Ages, and you know, the communists are going to be fine.
We'll have arrows.
Exactly. This is Megan from Woodbury. Megan, you are on the air with In Context.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, thank you. Hello. That was the first I have ever heard of that solar flare.
Ah.
And it really lines up with kind of what I was calling about. I just wanted to make a comment how I appreciate and I really think the direction of different alternate sources of energy,
mm-hmm,
like solar power was mentioned, and I think wind and water is also a great source of, you know, generating a different kind, you know,
mm-hmm,
way of electricity.
There are a lot of varieties. Some of them work better in certain situations. I mean, here in the Northeast, especially because we have a very mountainous landscape in some areas, solar is not right for everybody. If you don't have a southern or southwestern exposure, you're only going to have maybe 4 hours of daylight in the winter, spring, and fall months. So it's only in the summertime that it really works.
Caller, are you using any renewable energy sources yourself?
Unfortunately, no. I'm a renter right now, and I don't have anything really available in the space. But I do have a stream, and it's not, you know, just so much that I would be able to power anything significant from it. But I think wind power is something locally that could be in some sort of, I know New Haven, they have some turbines.
Yeah, there's some big ones out there by the water.
Yeah, yeah. Prospect just recently did not pass, and I'm kind of close to the area. I grew up in Beacon Falls, so I think that would be something to uncover again.
Yeah, and wind is an interesting one. It works when it's close to the destination. If it's many miles away, like the Midwestern wind farms, they're kind of pointless because they're not strong enough to generate transmission that can run for hundreds of miles, like with nuclear or, you know, other things like that. But if you are generating it locally, like on your house with a small turbine, you can actually continually charge a battery, trickle charge in your basement that can continue to run your lights in the event of an outage.
And as Abong mentioned in his remarks, the direction is towards local generation of electricity.
Yeah, and it should be. It makes sense. Doesn't it? I mean, you know, if we're building, if going forward, if our policy for new construction is to have some form of renewable energy on your house, I think in 10, 15 years, we would have a significant portion of the country generating its own electricity, easing the grid as we go forward. I mean, this policy should have been put in place in the 70s or 80s. You know, by now.
Well, now we're unprepared, but we can still.
Yeah, better late than never.
Well, we thank you very much for the call.
Thanks very much for your call, Megan.
Thank you very much.
We just have a few minutes left, but if you want to get in
on
this call.
We don't get a lot of female callers, do we?
We have 203-336-9756. You're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM, streaming at WPKN.org. The name of the show is In Context. We're a live call-in show. And if you'd like to speak to us, just before we have about another 5 minutes, the number is 203-336-9756. Perhaps you have a story relates to your experience during Tropical Storm Irene or during that freak snowstorm in October. If you were one of the 70% of Connecticut Light and Power companies that was without power, some for up to almost 2 weeks. You know, we'd like to hear your story and your suggestions about how we might have a better energy system, more reliable one.
It's kind of a nice change to have a female caller for once in this way. Everybody doesn't have to listen to us drone on for an hour.
That's right.
Well, we have been thinking of replacing you with a girl, but so you better watch out.
Hey, try to find somebody as cute as me. I don't know.
Well, I did a show about 4 years, 5 years ago now on renewables with the head of Long Island Renewable System. And we priced a lot of different types of renewable energy system. And the one that was actually the most economical was not electric. It was the hot water on the roof.
Yes.
And that was now competitive 5 years ago with oil. And
that
was
solar thermal.
And you put these tubes on your roof, and even in the winter, somehow they magnified the sunlight to make the water very hot, and it could provide you with all your hot water, which is something like 25% of all of your energy, your oil.
It keeps the heat at a constant temperature. So instead of the water in your boiler dropping too low, so that when your heater kicks on, it has to then work hard to bring that heat up to whatever the temperature is to heat your house, 100 degrees or whatever the water needs to be. It keeps the water at a steady, say, 85 degrees or 75 degrees, so that when your boiler kicks on, it only has to kick
on
for a couple of minutes to get that water back.
The marginal in temperature increase is small. And then, as I recall, a part of the system was to have these well-insulated tanks in your basement.
Right. Yeah, so you do have to increase your water capacity.
So you got to store it. If you want to call us, say three minutes. And if you want to call in, we just have a few minutes left on our show.
Too slick for us.
203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. Actually, that show is archived if you want to listen to it on my History Counts site. It's on renewable energies. And we looked at wind, we looked at solar, and we looked at this hot water system. And the others, right, I think, still require subsidy, some kind of tax credit in order to be competitive.
But then again, the more popular something becomes, the more competitive the market
is.
See, this is where competition is good, whereas in electricity generation for utility, it's almost a non-point, right?
And as a caller mentioned, the batteries are getting better. And
that's right.
I'm sure they're better than they were 5 years ago.
They're incredibly advanced and compared to where they were 5 years ago. And that's only because they're in demand. There's more of them available. The best ones come from Germany. They're a lot smaller than they used to be, and they're a lot cheaper. And the solar panels themselves are smaller and cheaper and lighter, and they're just better. The solar controllers are better. The cost has really come down.
And, our show, we talk a lot about the international situation and the war. And this brings us back, which is where we should be putting our investment. We should be putting our investment in and developing a multitude of different alternative energy sources instead of spending almost $1 trillion a year fighting
diversify.
Wars, fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and wherever.
Well, and actually on that subject, right before we get off the air, there are just a couple stories I wanted to mention. Speaking of Iraq and the many wars, today the European Union agreed to the 27 ambassadors from the various European Union countries agreed on oil embargo, on the oil embargo that they want to implement, which would start immediately. They said they're, putting it to a final vote.
So oil hovering around $100 is going to jump right back up to around $140.
And it would mean an immediate embargo and a cancellation of all future contracts and basically any contracts that go longer than July. In July, all contracts with Iran will cease. In addition to that...
So that puts us kind of back on track for that September target that United States bigwigs want to go to war.
Exactly. But Iran, though, said that it vows to shut down the Straits of Hormuz if the EU actually does follow through with this, leaving, of course, our entire fleet, all of our aircraft carriers, trapped in the Persian Gulf. Even if they didn't blow them up, but they just closed the strait by sinking a few ships there... That would effectively trap our entire fleet.
So is the oil embargo you said is done? That's agreed on?
Yes, the European Union has agreed on it.
I'm really surprised. I think that is they're going to hurt themselves, and if they get dragged into a war with Iran, I think that would be a big mistake. But that's obviously
none of them are going to have to fight it.
And maybe that's their thought is they'll be there to pick up the benefits.
Well, the remnants of the empire.
But who is this? This is Germany and France and England essentially calling the shots.
Italy, Greece, and Spain are tagging along, but that's about it.
I think Greece opposes it though.
Well, we're gonna.
Well, we're actually we got to get off the air now because.
We will be back next Monday, and it is the beginning of WPKN's Fund Drive. It's our war report, so we'll be pitching for money, and we'll also be updating you on latest developments of the war. So please join us and be generous as you have been in the past. WPKN's
bombs and bucks.
WPKN's Fund Drive, January 30th. It starts next Monday.
Go to our website at incontextreport.com.
Find us on Facebook.
Take care.
There's a man with a gun over there. I tell it.